In addition to being the first African-American Pulitzer Prize winner, Gwendolyn Brooks was Illinois' longest-serving poet laureate, a post she held for over 30 years. She was the first African-American poetry consultant to Congress, a post now known as the U.S. Poet Laureate. Her daughter, Nora Brooks Blakely, says her mother kept writing pretty much until the day she died in 2000 at the age of 83.
Her quote is that poetry is life distilled.
Life distilled.
Yes. And so she was doing a lot of distillation. She looked at things very carefully. She observed well. In essence, reported life back to its livers.
In some ways, she was like Emily Dickinson, where she was, you know, she was looking at what was happening outside her window in the streets and the alleyways and the front yards and backyards where she lived.
It's funny you mentioned Emily Dickinson, because Emily Dickinson was one of my mother's favorite poets. So she did that. But she also took in what was happening in the world. She was a devotee of television news, newspapers, magazines. My parents both had an incredible library, and it didn't just sit there. She read from classic books to new works in literature to information on politics and finance. And I think in the 90s or 80s, she did this poem called Patrick Bowie of Cabrini-Green, which was about a real young man who was shot and killed in the Cabrini-Green Project. And when she talks about him and uses the phrase, our interrupted man, that speaks to everything that's happening today. And so when you read that to a teenager today, it means something to them. It there's a resonance there.
She looked at all of this stuff that was happening with a very clear and sharp eye, and yet it was not critical, it was not judgmental, it was compassionate.
It was compassionate, but it wasn't mushy. When you look at a lot of her work, a lot of it is about specific people. And when you look at that, you get a chance to realize just how much she tells you about the world that they lived in just through this one person or these two people, as in the Bean Eaters, the poem itself.
Talk about that poem a little bit for people who are unfamiliar.
It starts out, they eat beans mostly, this old yellow pair. Dinner is a casual affair. Plain chipware on a plain and creaking wood, tin flatware. And you go on and you hear this poem, and you realize that you know far more about these two people than what is on the page.
Your mother herself went through some hard times. Your father was also a poet, Henry Blakely. Is it true that on the day that she got word of the Pulitzer Prize, that she'd won the Pulitzer Prize, her electricity was off because they didn't have the money to pay their bill?
It's absolutely true. And she didn't want to tell the people who were coming. They came with their reporter notebooks and their cameras and stuff, and they were plugging their cameras in, and she didn't want to tell them that nothing was going to happen. And when they plugged them in, all of their lights came on.
And did that mean someone had paid the bill?
No one ever knows. She never knew. We don't know whether somebody sitting at Con Ed saw the news and said, oh my God, or whether somebody who had heard about it just went ahead and paid the bill. We never knew what happened. It's just one of those little miracles in the world.
What other hardship did she experience personally?
We lived, from the time I was two, we lived in a house, a little small house, that cost them $8,000 when they first bought it. There were many tough times where we were in danger of losing that house. And I was eating far more meals of beans and chicken wings than I necessarily wanted to. And this was before chicken wings became really the expensive popular piece of the chicken.
I want to ask you about something that the poet, the Chicago poet Haki Madhubuti, said about your mother. He was kind of a protege of your mother, and he said her religion was kindness. What do you think he meant by that?
That the phrase that her religion was kindness, I think, just talked about her commitment to helping other people and being there for other people. The stories of writers and other artists that she helped with a kind note, some of whom I've talked to, and they said that they put the notes up on their wall, they framed them. It might have been a check for groceries, or in some cases even rent. It was her willingness to go to readings and be there after the readings until every last person that wanted to talk to her had had a chance to speak with her. It was the Poet Laureate Awards. She created the Poet Laureate Awards. There was no such thing before she became Poet Laureate. There were no responsibilities identified for Poet Laureates. And she was the one who created the awards, and for 31 years?
I think she was the longest running Illinois Poet Laureate, even longer than Carl Sandburg, whom she replaced.
Way longer than Carl Sandburg.
So what was...
I can't remember how many years Carl Sandburg was Poet Laureate, but it was nowhere remotely near 30 years.
What was that experience like for her to be the Poet Laureate of Illinois?
Well, she basically created the experience. When Governor Otto Kerner asked her, one of the questions that she had asked him is, what were the responsibilities of a poet laureate? And I always remember that he told her that her responsibilities would be commensurate with her pay. And there was no pay.
There was no pay.
But she didn't feel comfortable with that, with having a title without something to do, her best gift in that position to the state of Illinois was the Poet Laureate Awards. I mean, nobody had ever thought about doing that, and she has over 30 years of children's writings from kindergarten through 12th grade that might not have ever existed if she did not have that award program.
You mentioned that her poetry, her life, became increasingly political in the 60s and 70s. Why did your mother think poetry was a good vehicle for affecting reform? People don't think of poetry today necessarily as having anything to do with the public discourse.
As her worldview changed, the way that she addressed certain things in her poetry changed, because this was now the truth as she knew it to be. I don't think that there was ever a time that she said, I'm going to sit down and write a political poem.
I have to ask you, do you have a favorite poem of your mother's? And would you be kind enough to read it?
I usually run screaming from that question because my favorites of hers change by the day or the week. But I do know that there's one poem that I've been reading more lately, and it's always in my top three. As much as I love We Real Cool, I think that, as my mother said, it would be nice if anthologists and others recognized that she had written more than one poem. So certainly one of my favorites, and one that I think more identifies what her message to the world is the poem Paul Robeson. That time we all heard it, cool and clear, cutting across the hot grit of the day. The major voice, the adult voice, forgoing rolling river, forgoing tearful tale of bale and barge and other symptoms of an old despond. Warning in music words, devout and large, that we are each other's harvest. We are each other's business. We are each other's magnitude and bond.
That's beautiful. We are each other's harvest. Nora Brooks Blakely, it is just a delight to talk with you about your mother, the great American poet, Gwendolyn Brooks. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you for taking the time and the interest. I really appreciate it.